So last week we talked, Bert introduced us through the first chapter of Ruth last week. In case you missed out, we have a podcast and sermons online that you can download and listen to in the comfort of your own home or car while you're commuting to work. But anyway, so just to recap, Ruth chapter one, it's about two women. It's about a girl called Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi. And Naomi actually, she became a widow. She lost her husband who died in Moab. They'd moved to Moab. And her two sons married two Moabite women and... Two sons married two Moabite women, and the sons died as well. So you're left with three women without husbands. One of them, Orpah, not to be confused by the name Oprah, she stayed in Moab while Naomi and Ruth moved back to Bethlehem, where Naomi and the dead husband was originally from. So last week, Bert talked about how at crossroads, sometimes you go through crossroads in life, different circumstances that you might be faced with, that affect you, and how the grass is always greener on the other side and you're always like looking from afar and things like that. But it's a reminder of God's sovereignty and that we always need to trust him. But anyway, I'd recommend that you read the book of Ruth in your own time as well. It's quite nice because it's a nice storyline to follow. And we did a Bible study in preparation for this, me, Ben and Bert, and it was really good fun to look through it. But typically when I read scripture, I usually go through three methods of studying scripture. It's observations for O, observations. So you're observing the context and the situation of the passage. Then you're interpreting, which is the I, interpretation of the text. And then you have A for application. How can we apply this text into my life today? And that's what we're going to do here this evening as we talk about chapter 2 of Ruth. So, there's a bit of scripture reading to start, but then I'll get to the application points at the end. Anyway, so I'm reading from chapter 2, verse 1 to 2 here. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So let's pause there. So the word glean. Now, I had to do some research because I'm not a farmer. And I had to find out what this word means. So the context of glean is actually to do with in a field. And you're basically cutting down all the wheats of grains and things like that. And so that's the reaper's job, okay, the farmer's job. They cut it down. But when you're gleaning, you're literally following behind them and picking up the scraps that might have fallen out of their bundle. And so you're literally like shadowing them and just picking up the scraps that just fall because gravity does its thing and, you know, things fall to the floor. And so Ruth here, she wanted to go and glean after someone in whose sight I shall find favor. Now, this passage itself, I actually identified loads of things about Ruth's character. She accepts poverty, okay? She wasn't born into it. Otherwise, you know, she wasn't born into it. She had to learn about it, okay? She could have ditched Naomi and not go with her to Bethlehem. She could have stayed in Moab like Orpah did, but she didn't. She accepted the poverty and she accepted going to Bethlehem with Naomi. She takes action. And she knows that if she doesn't do anything, her and her mum-in-law would starve to death. She speaks humbly and she says, "Let me go and glean after someone who I shall find grace and favor and kindness." But it wasn't a sense of entitlement. I'm just going to, go and nobody can stop me. And I'm just going to go and glean because in the Levitical law, I'm entitled to do that. She doesn't say that. But instead, she says, "Let me go and glean, hopefully behind someone who will be gracious and kind, in whose sight I shall find favor." She's very dutiful to Naomi. She's very loyal. Usually daughters and their mother-in-laws, they don't always get along. But here, they're family, not by blood, but by, that connection there. She respects her elders. I noticed that actually, kind of like a Chinese girl, maybe it's a Jewish thing as well, similar to the Chinese culture, when, you know, you announce to your parents, "I'm going now," or I'm home, you know, and your parents might go, "Oh, you're back. Have you eaten?" And you're like, "Yes, I have, thank you, and things like that. So there's always that communication, the, stating the obvious. Yes, we can see that you're home, but it's important to verbalize it. But there she is saying, let me go and glean in the fields. Like, she could have just gone, but she kind of asked permission from Naomi to go. Anyway, so reading on from verse 3. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, so the farmers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. So we know from verse 1, Boaz is introduced to us as the reader, okay, that he's a relative of Elimelech, Ruth's dead father-in-law. Okay, and Ruth doesn't know all this, okay, nor does she know whose field it belongs to. But it just so happens that God, you know, helps her and directs her to this field that belongs to Boaz. Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. Okay, and he said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. So here we get a glimpse of who Boaz is. Okay, so boy meets girl. This is a story of how boy meets girl, or man meets woman. Anyway, so who is he from this passage? We can identify that he is part of Elimelech's family. He's a relative, and he has a land. He has land, and in those days, if you had land, you'd be considered as crazy rich Asian. I mean, Jew. Crazy rich Jew. And so basically, and not only does he have land, he has staff to work the land, so he doesn't have to get down on his knees, because it's quite a big field. Big, I don't know how many acres, but there's definitely loads of land, and he's got loads of staff to help him to sort it out. And he's so therefore he's doing pretty well. And also, we can learn from this verse, verse 4, when he greets his staff, he's a boss. Not only is he a boss, but he's a nice boss. I realize actually it's nice that a boss greets his staff. And not only so, the staff greet him back. And from this exchange, I realize, oh, there's a bit of care that's gone into it, actually. So I don't know if you guys, I'm not going to talk about my current boss. In previous times, you know, I've had good relationships with my bosses. Not to say I don't have a good... Yeah, well, anyway. but you can tell when someone's not had a good relationship with their boss, because the turnover of the staff goes really fast, okay? You don't tend to stay in a long period of time in a job if you have a bad boss, right? Not only so he greets his staff. He chats to them, and they happily chat back. There's conversations. And it's nice to be greeted, actually. And what's interesting is that recently I noticed someone in our youth group. I'm not going to name names, just in case it gets back to this person. And I really noticed that, you know, whenever I walk into the room, this person will go, hi, Anzi! And then everyone, like, turns, and then, hi, Anzi! And it's nice to feel greeted, like, acknowledged, because you don't feel invisible. Anyway... Sorry, but basically it's really nice. You don't realize it until you get greeted. And even like when you're a stranger, it's nice to feel like, oh, I'm welcomed in, even though they may not know my name, or my full name is really hard to pronounce. But it's just nice to have that hello and greeting, and we welcome you, and things like that, and actually feel that meaning behind it. And so from that, I was like, oh, I need to keep doing that, actually, because it's very, very meaningful, and it helps, you know, build that friendship and that connection. Anyway, so we can see here that Boaz, he greets his staff, and the staff happily greet him back as well. The Lord be with you, and they answered, the Lord bless you. So there's that good exchange there. Continuing on, verse 5-7. Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, she is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. So Boaz, this boss, who's a good boss, by the way, in case I didn't say that already, he's obviously very observant of whoever is new. He's probably the type of person to have conversations with everyone, not because he's bored, but possibly because, you know, he cares for people. He wants to know their story. And he wants to find out who this stranger is working in the fields. And he asks the person in charge, the manager of the farmers, the reaper, okay? And he obviously doesn't want anyone dodgy on his field because he's wanting to protect his staff as well. So the manager person reports back, oh, she's a Moabite woman. Okay, so she's a foreigner. So Moab people were a bit dodgy. And traditionally, they were the group of people that would do child sacrifices. And there's all sorts of dodgy stuff and worshipping idols and things like that. So Moabite people in general were seen as not good people. So she's a Moabite woman. And then the manager mentions, oh, yeah, but she asked permission to glean, okay, so, and to gather after the reapers. So she was pretty polite and humble as a result. And she's hardworking because she's been working since early morning, maybe to take a short rest, maybe, you know, and I thought, oh, maybe she just took a toilet break because, you know, that's normal. Or maybe just to catch her breath because, you know, she's not used to this type of hard labor. So then we go on to verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in any other field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. So there's this polite exchange between a landowner, Boaz, with a foreigner, Ruth. He advises her not to go and glean in another field, offering her protection and safety in this field. Okay, you know what this means? He's a very nice chap. And he's fully aware that Ruth, all by herself as a woman, not only is she a woman, but she's a foreign woman, and she's a widow. She is at great risk. And though she's living in poverty and she's here to glean, he knows that she can be safe here. So he offers her protection. And not only her gleaning in this field, but he wants her to stay with the other women as well. Okay, keep close to the young women. What does this mean? He's fully aware that men are quite scary. He wants to ensure that she's safe and protected. And so actually I realized, yeah, even back in those days, women are in a dangerous situation, especially if they're walking by themselves. Same today. If I'm walking by myself late at night, I'm like, I get a bit like, I have shifty eyes, okay? And I think there was a Sally Oak campaign petition thing to make Sally Oak safe, and it's true, because there have been times where actually Sally Oak does feel a bit dodgy and scary. I've got loads of stories of, girl students being followed, and I've been followed, so I understand what it means to be followed and have you know, people give you that look like of lust, and it's really, really not nice. So it makes sense for him to, you know, tell her stay close to the women, because actually there is safety in numbers. Even with, you know, there was a you know, just going home, when you're going home, just always practice caution. Not to say, you know, all men are scary, but it's important to just to be careful, really. Anyway, so moving on, verses 10. Wait, where are we? Come. There we go. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? So Ruth is obviously very humbled by his kindness of offering protection, of one, gleaning on this field, and two, telling her to stick with other women. She's fully aware that she's a foreigner. Here she identifies it. She sticks out like a very sore thumb, okay? And not only, she might not even be acceptable in the eyes of the Israelite people. She's Moabite after all. But she's shocked and she's humbled. And you can tell, you know, why have I found favor? Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing you have come to take refuge. So Boaz was really impressed with Ruth, taking care of Naomi, leaving her own home country and following God, and being part of a people group she didn't know before. and ultimately coming under the wings of God to take refuge. Boaz says a prayer of blessing over her, that the Lord repay you for what you have done. He did a background check on her, and he prays for God to take care of her, knowing that, you know, only God can be the one that can take care of her, and that that she'll find favor and be blessed. But I love that, you know, he says, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and under whose wings you have come to take refuge, under God, okay? And I had this, you know, it's a reminder that actually it's good. It's good to come under God's wing. It brings God the most glory when we rely on God. Not only, you know, she's no longer turning to Moabite gods anymore. She's not turning to child sacrifice or any other idol, but it's turning to God under his wing to take refuge. And that is really incredible. And she's accepted into God's people. So reading on from verse 13. Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, that you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. Again, she identifies that. Yeah, she's a foreigner and she's not a servant. She's not part of his team of people. But yet, you know, Boaz prays a blessing over her. She's humbled. And she notices that he's really kind, and despite that she's, you know, not one of them. So she's observant of his kindness, and this is her way of acknowledging his kindness and saying thanks. And she's really polite. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied and she had some left over. Not only was he kind, but he invited her to come and eat with the rest of the staff. She was being treated like she was part of the team. And then Boaz serves food to Ruth. Wow, again, no sense of serious hierarchy there. He's serving her, treating her special. I'm pretty sure he would treat most of his staff that way as well. But he offers her bread for nourishment. Not only is it bread, but here, dip the bread in balsamic vinegar or this sauce thing. Because, you know, he's obviously a rich man and he loves his flavors and he likes his food and he's able to have that. But here, he's sharing this good stuff with her. He wants her to enjoy the good flavors too. And he wants to ensure that the staff and Ruth enjoyed it. And that's really, really nice of him, actually. And so Ruth ate and she was satisfied. She even had leftovers. And that's how of an abundant time that they had sitting in Boaz's field, eating with the staff. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some of the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So Boaz instructs his staff to help out Ruth. So when they're taking out the bundles, just leave some extra on the floor for her so that she can pick it up. And he's really considerate and thoughtful to instruct this, to give her extra to glean. So then I looked at this word reproach. What does reproach mean in this context? And basically reproach means to give that bad, evil stare, you know, that disapproval look. You know when you've been approached by your mother. She has that look and it's like, oh no, you know it from a young age. Even when you're married, the wife will give the husband a reproachful look, I'm sure. I've seen it with Bert and Fan. Anyway, but but Bert gives me that reproachful look sometimes as well. I've seen it too. But everyone knows that look, that reproach. But here he is telling his staff not to give her that look, that reproach. Do not reproach her. Do not tell her off. Do not disapprove of her action. And he instructs his staff to be kind. Perhaps his staff naturally are wary of foreigners and strangers in the land, especially Moabites too, because they were dodgy people. But here he was making kind provisions for her, having his staff be generous. Most bosses would be really critical of their staff if they're very sloppy and if they're very wasteful and if they, you know, are very messy and wasting the boss's resources. But here he is, he's telling his staff to purposely put some extra out for her and be generous and kind. So Ruth, a stranger in the midst, can, you know, pick it up. And this is not just Boaz being kind. He is obeying the command in the Torah, in the Old Testament Levitical law, to show generosity to the foreign stranger who is poor. So basically, Boaz is a man of God, and he is incredibly kind. In verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an epah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. So Ruth worked from morning to evening with a few short breaks and a short lunch break. Basically, she was working for long hours, and it was the first day of work. And evening time goes home to Naomi. She managed to sort out the barley so that she didn't have to take home bundles of random size shaped barley things. And she, beat it all up, and then she collected it and put it into a basket. Smart thinking, planning ahead. I love that about her. And she left the field and took home also the leftover food. And in my opinion, she had leftover food. She didn't just eat it or throw it away. She gave it and gave it to Naomi, so that though she blessed Naomi as well. She's very considerate and generous to her dead husband's mum. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." So Naomi's question is a typical mother-to-daughter question, like, what did you do today? Who did you see? Where did you go? What were you up to? And that's a genuine concern for the daughter-in-law. But she could see that Ruth had a lot of food with her, which is amazing. Two widows who were starving that morning. And now, there's an abundance of food. Side note, this question, where did you glean today? It made me realize, yeah, sometimes we need to ask ourselves that question. Where did I glean today? Where did I go? And what did I learn today? What did I pick up? It's a nice debrief evaluation question to ask your family member or a friend. What did I learn? What did I pick up? What can I be thankful to God for from today? It reminds me of that song by Humphrey Bull. What have you done today to make me feel proud? You know that song. And it's just evaluating and debriefing as to what happened. And so that's a nice little side point there. But she asks Ruth that. And Ruth told Naomi who she worked for. And quick, Naomi's very quick. And she realized, oh, this is a good thing. Naomi's very expressive and, very happy that Ruth was blessed. She puts two and two together. Naomi said to the daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." She remembers that actually Boaz is a family member. She'd obviously forgotten since she'd moved to Moab, and she was going through all this crisis and death and things. But now that she's back, she's finally remembered that she's got an extended family member. The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. So I was like, oh, what's redeemer mean? Let me look that up. And the word redeemer is commonly used in a lot of Christian settings. It's a Christian buzzword. But so let me explain. To redeem something is basically you're compensating for poor past performance or behaviors. So to make an atonement, to make right something, to make amends or fix or to save a problem. To recover or reclaim or to regain back or rescue. So these are all about making something right again. And so Boaz is a close relative to Elimelech, the dead husband of Naomi. No connection of blood to Ruth or Naomi, who married into the family. But Boaz is a redeemer. Only Naomi knew. Ruth certainly didn't know. But Boaz is the redeemer in their family. And by the Torah, according to the Old Testament law, to be a redeemer, you had to have four requirements, four things that you had to, fit in this tick box list thing. So first one was you had to be a family member. So you had to be connected in the family, a close kin. You had to, secondly, be physically able to redeem. So he didn't have any debt. He had to have a clean slate and everything was all good. So he was able to physically redeem. And then three, be willing, okay? You had to be willing, so not being forced to redeem. And then four, the process of redeeming or redemption will only be made fully complete if the debt that was owed, or the problem is completely paid off or sorted out, okay? So those are the four requirements. And so here, according to Naomi, Boaz is able to help them in their state of poverty, because that was their problem, that poverty. And not only so, Naomi wasn't able to have any more sons to carry on the family name. Orpah is gone. Ruth is still in the family, and she's the next viable option to carry on the family name. Boaz can come and be the redeemer, and he can help them out. And so obviously Naomi's super, super happy about that. And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" So basically, Boaz told her to stay until the end of harvest, okay, which was quite a period of time. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So Ruth continues to explain about this and all those provisions and all those good stuff. And Naomi identifies, actually, it's good to, you know, for Ruth to stay with the young women for protection. And yeah, like I said, women in those days were targeted, and turns out, yeah, it's all very Game of Thronesy back then. A lot of attacks, and there was rapes of certain women, and it was all very messy. But yeah, Naomi's very happy about this arrangement, staying in Boaz's field, because he's family and he's kind, and yeah, stay with the women. So my take home point, for this evening, for Ruth, is actually looking about this tale of this woman. She's a foreigner, and obviously she knows her own place, her standing in society. She's polite and asks permission. She's allowed to follow the workers in the field and pick up scraps after them. I find it interesting that she is noticed, even though she's technically a nobody. And she must have been pretty sweaty looking, working away, because she's obviously not used to this type of labor. And we all know that when women sweat, we don't necessarily look or feel great. And we don't call it sweating. We call it glistening and shining bright like a diamond. But I'm pretty sure she wasn't that attractive looking. And we'll stay tuned for next week, chapter 3, where there's a bit of an outfit change thing happening there. But in chapter 2, she certainly wasn't dolled up. She certainly probably had BO because she was sweating and smelling bad. But she sprays and stuff in chapter 3. She didn't put much effort in, and she wasn't concerned about, you know, what she looked like, but she was more concerned about gleaning and getting honest work done, and so that she and her mother-in-law wouldn't starve to death. She didn't have an ulterior motive to find a husband, and her reason to go and glean was to hopefully, go and glean behind someone who was kind enough to let her. Sometimes us women, especially the single ones, we might think, "Oh, maybe you'll find someone at this wedding. Let me just doll myself up." We don't say it, but we might think it. anyway, but here she is. She wasn't thinking about that. And today, I asked the worship team to kind of dress up a bit, you know, put a bit more effort in. It's nice to, have our Sunday best as opposed to just roll over to church in our trainers and like jogging bottoms and like, you know, because when you dress down in your loungewear, you're quite casual, you're quite, you know. But actually, I feel really dressed up. This dress feels really tight. It was fine a couple of days ago, but. And then I ate out. this is a bit tight. I'm feeling a bit stiff. I couldn't even bend over earlier to pick up keys. So I had to get a kid to do it. But anyway, so then I thought, yeah, I'll get the team to dress up. It's nice to put in a bit of effort. Not because it's like for show, but rather because actually I want to give God my best. I want to dress for the occasion. But here, Ruth was not dressed for the occasion. And I realized actually... Yeah, it's okay, but she was still noticed. Ruth was really surprised that Boaz would notice her, a foreigner. And during our Bible study prep time with Ben and Bert in Bert's kitchen a couple of weeks ago, as we were trying to figure out, you know, who was going to preach which chapter and what were you going to say, just in case we overlapped or whatnot. And I asked them the question, was Ruth pretty? Why would Boaz take notice of her? Was she hot? And then Bert pointed out, in all his wisdom, he was like, actually, most women in the Bible, if they're pretty, the author would write it in the Bible. And I'm like, whoa, is that true? Let me just double check and fact check that. So I did some research online, and it turns out it's true. A pastor is correct in that. And beautiful or handsome people in the Bible will be mentioned. So Sarah, Abraham's wife, she had to fend off the Pharaoh, so she was quite pretty. Rachel, she was pretty. Leah, the first wife, had weak eyes, but Rachel was beautiful and lovely. And then you've got Bathsheba, who led David down the slippery slope of adultery. And then you've got, you know, different women like Esther. You've got the dark woman mentioned in the Song of Songs. So you get the point. So women that were beautiful in the Bible will be mentioned as beautiful. But Ruth, she wasn't mentioned as beautiful. Instead, the only thing that was highlighted was that she followed God. Okay, she walked and followed God. And here, Boaz noticed Ruth. And then when it came down to Ruth, Ruth was a good man. He was a landowner, a good boss, generous, hospitable. Makes provisions for Ruth, cares, and offers protection. And get this, he's the Redeemer. I love that Naomi at the end of this chapter was reminded that actually God does provide, and God provided through the means of Boaz. And God helps us when we are in great need as well. Just as Naomi and Ruth, the two widows, were in destitute, God helps them. But you want to know what the take-home point of chapter 2 is? It just so happens that Ruth goes to the field to glean. It just so happens that it had to be Boaz's field. And it just so happens to be Boaz, a family member. And Naomi just so happens to finally remember that he's a family member. Ruth takes notice of Boaz taking notice of her. And then she has found favor. And then I realize, actually, yeah, Boaz, he's a very special character. And even like the theologian Charles Spurgeon, he makes this connection that Jesus is like our glorious Boaz. Like Boaz, God notices us. Even if we're not dressed up, even if we're sweating and working hard, God still notices us. And he grants us favor and kindness. He notices us when we're feeling down, when we're, you know, been working for loads of hours overtime or just helping out in a shift. He notices when, you know, someone is not treating us fairly. He notices when, you know, maybe someone said something really mean to us and we were really hurt by those words. And God gives us food and our daily bread. And there's this image that I found. It's about being protected under God's wings. So there's a big bird there and sheltering over these two small birds. And it's a beautiful image, actually, of God we are covered under the wings of God. He is daily protecting us, and we have nothing to be afraid of. He embraces us, and he wraps his wings around us. We're protected, covered, and secured, and loved. We are very much like Ruth. We are foreigners, we are misfits, but yet he notices us. We're accepted into his family, adopted as sons and daughters of the Most High God. And we're invited in, and we have this very special spiritual protection, a covering, because God notices us. Our God sees us as a son or daughter. Sometimes you might feel like your mum or dad may not understand you or get you. Sometimes you might feel like, you know, you don't feel appreciated in your family, or maybe you're a mum and you feel like your kids don't listen to you, or the laundry pile keeps growing and growing. Maybe you feel lonely despite you being in a relationship, or feeling misunderstood or unheard. Or maybe you feel like, you know, you're having a hard time and you feel invisible. Or maybe you're praying and praying for God to answer your prayers, maybe to remove a thorn in your side, but you still feel like God hasn't noticed you. But I was reminded that Ruth was noticed, and God notices us too. Sometimes we actually need to go be Ruth and go to the field and glean. We need to go to the field and glean. Maybe that means spending time with God in God's word. Maybe that means coming to God in worship. Maybe that also means stepping out of your comfort zone and not sitting there begging, but instead to come before God, stepping out in faith. Maybe that means submitting to God, trusting God, and following God. just like Ruth, who followed, trusted, and submitted to God. And I was reminded of the story when Jesus noticed that woman in the crowd who had been bleeding for 12 years ongoing. And she just reached out and touched his cloak. And Jesus knew that automatically he healed this woman. He noticed. And God notices you and me too. And he cares for us. He really does care for us every single day. And so this morning is the same message, but I shared, and hopefully I won't cry tonight. I nearly cried this morning, but I'll try not to cry tonight. But basically, I recently had a really rough time during Chinese New Year, leading up to Chinese New Year, and I actually really wanted to quit. I wanted to write a resignation letter and hand it in. I realized that actually everything felt like it was going bad. My job, my life, I felt really lonely. I felt unnoticed and heard, very single. The thoughts were plaguing me like, social isolation is the number one killer. Maybe I should leave Birmingham and be closer to my family. And Chinese New Year is a time of great family reunions, and you see on social media, you know, everyone doing that yisang with millions of chopsticks, and it gets really messy. And I'm like, why am I here by myself? Eating gongs, I mean. And then instant noodles. And but actually, I realized, oh, things have changed since James and Christina have left. Yeah, it's been quite a hard journey. I think Bert tries not to talk about it. I don't know if he talks to his wife about it, but like it's been quite a shift in how we serve. Bert mentioned that he's had to do more pastoral care before. He was doing a lot of delegation and a lot of admin work, and I've had to step up a bit more as well. But then I realized, actually, you know, I don't know if I want to continue. And I thought, maybe I should really think about resigning and quitting. And it's tough and it's tiring. But then just when I needed it, God provided the help. He provided someone on the phone who I could talk to, and someone who's a lot more wiser. And she warned me, you know, don't listen to those lies. That's Satan telling you those lies. And I realized, okay, to prevent Satan from whispering those lies to me even more, I need to glean and go to that field and pick up God's word. And so God provided really low-hanging fruit through the Bible, in which I could just like pick up a psalm, and it just really spoke into my soul. God's words really penetrating deep into my soul, and that was the nourishment that I really needed from my devotional time. And then just so happened that God provided friends to invite me around for Chinese New Year dinner, and that was a really hard time actually, and I was really thankful for that meal cooked by a dear friend. And then an email came through as well, an old email to my attention, and it was an old email that I'd written about when I was first called into ministry, and it read something along the lines of, if you ever feel like quitting, you need to stop and you need to remember that you were called, and it was Christ who called you, and to remember that burden. And then I had a train journey with a friend from Milton Keynes, and he was asking me about, you know, my calling to ministry and then the whole journey. And so I was able to like walk through that journey with him, and this is what happened, and, you know, and this is where I am today. And so God was reminding me that actually he cares for me, and he provides help when I need it the most. And he provides those reminders. And though I might be a Martha and always doing, sometimes I need to stop and glean and just worship God, be like Mary. And this friend even asked me about female beings in ministry. And I said to him, it's okay. Like, I'm submitting to God. I need to follow God before I listen to men who may have issues with female leadership. And I'm first and foremost a follower of Christ. And Christ has called me to follow him, and secondly, to lead. And if I ignore that second point, to lead, I'm not following God's commandments. And so, whilst I was gleaning after you know, just gleaning in the field and coming before God, he presented to me the song. And I it really spoke to me, and it really spoke true into my life. And it was as if God was reminding me that he doesn't miss anything. He sees everything. He notices everything. And so I thought, actually, I wanna sing this song to you guys, not as a performance, but rather as an act of worship. I don't normally sing in public like this, but unless it's karaoke. But I just wanted to sing it to you guys, and I want, yeah, hopefully the words to really speak into you guys just as much as it spoke into you guys, into me. But I'm going to have Derek play for me. Thank you. And the words are so powerful, and I just, it just, yeah, it was, it's just really, really good. And hopefully I won't cry. I'm sorry if I do. It's called You Don't Miss a Thing. And it's about, yeah, just God noticing everything. Heaven tremble. As you breathe, we live and have our being. When you speak, oh, I feel it in my chest. When you sing, all my fears are put to rest. What a wondrous thing could stand to sing, 'cause when I fall to my knees, you're the one who pulls me up again. What a mystery that you notice me, and in a crowd of 10,000, you don't miss a thing. Comes a sonnet. When you laugh, the storm around me ceases. You whisper, and all my enemies are scattered. You surround me with angels on assignment. What a wondrous thing I could stand to sing, 'cause when I fall to my knees, you're the one who pulls me up again. What a mystery that you notice me, and in a crowd of 10,000, you don't miss a thing.
There's no place I can go, your love won't find me. No place I can hide that you don't see. No place I could fall that your love couldn't catch me. You see it all, you see it all through the eyes of love. There's no place I can go, your love won't find me. No place I can hide that you don't see. No place I could fall that your love couldn't catch me. You see it all, you see it all through the eyes of love. You're all around me, yeah. When I withdraw, still you pursue. What a wondrous thing, I can stand to sing. 'Cause when I fall to my knees, you're the one who pulls me up again. What a mystery that you notice me, and in a crowd of 10,000, you don't miss a thing. You don't miss a thing.
Would you like to stand?